Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and as always, we're wishing you the best. We love doing the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. For one thing, you can listen now every Tuesday at 10 a.m., and that's when we do the show live. We'll be bringing on our guests shortly. Or you can listen anytime, 24/7, and that's true about all of the wonderful shows right here on Progressive Radio Network, because they are archived, and so it's very, very easy to tune in at your convenience. We have a lot of really special things going on at the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and you can find them at naturalnurse.com. If you go to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, there is a photo about a new webinar, seminar, summit that many of the top holistic doctors in the field are lecturing, and it's between March 14th and March 22nd. Yours truly, Ellen Kamai, is one of the presenters. I'll be doing a topic on virility and vitality. And as many of you know, we've written many, many books, and one is called The Natural Guide to Great Sex. So that will be really what we're talking about in that webinar, although a lot of things that lead to longevity and high energy, which of course makes everyone feel a whole lot better. Now, other presenters at that webinar will be Dr. Michael Murray, who you probably have heard of, as well as Dr. Stephen Sinatra, very famous cardiologist, and about 30 other presenters over that entire period of time, March 14th to March 22nd. What is the cost of attending? It's that best number, which is called zero. So there is no cost for attending. So all you have to do is go to naturalnurse.com, and you'll see the banner for the Michael Murray webinar on the sliders right on top. Just click on it, and you can register for free. Or go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and right on top you'll see a photo of me. If you click on that link, you will go right to where you can register for free. And thank you so much for joining us today. I would like to introduce our guest. He's a very exciting guest, and that is board-certified internal medicine and concierge physician, Dr. Ken Red Cross. And he is a medical doctor. He is the founder of Red Cross Concierge, a personalized medical practice designed to enhance the patient-doctor relationship while providing convenient access to a full spectrum of healthcare services and holistic and wellness counseling. As one of the first full-service concierge personalized medical practices in the United States, Dr. Red Cross's patient portfolio includes many well-known people, as well as individuals from all walks and stages of life. His focus is on developing the patient-doctor bond in a unique, characteristic way where his concierge services allows for a more strategic and customized approach to each patient's healthcare plan. Dr. Red Cross attended Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center in New York and specializes in internal medicine. And he is also a media personality who has been on The Doctor, The Insider, and E! Entertainment. And today we're very happy to have him right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Welcome, Dr. Red Cross.
Good morning, Ellen. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to be with you today.
And I am excited to make your acquaintance because you are definitely a young, upcoming physician, and I'm really interested to backtrack a little bit into your past and what brought you, first of all, to medicine. It seems like, you know, that's kind of star-crossed. I mean, you were born with the name Red Cross?
I know. It's so funny. I didn't really think about that at all, Ellen, until I was in medical school, and all my professors would have a good laugh about it. And I said, you know, I guess that does kind of make sense. You know, I don't know, Ellen, it's funny. I don't know if it's the fact I grew up an only child down in the South, and I always loved to run my mouth, and I loved people, and I really love health. And that just married so much into exactly what I wanted to do. I was one of these kids who kind of wanted to change the world, and I've been blessed to at least reach out and touch a lot of people. And so I always knew that I wanted to make a difference, and I love healthcare, and so it absolutely works for me.
So you started out on your path enjoying science, I'm sure, and knowing you wanted to be a doctor right from the start, which is great because a lot of kids flounder around. And that's a great thing to have a focus and know what direction you want to move in. But one thing we know is for you to have gone to Columbia Presbyterian, that's not an easy thing to get into. So you also had to excel.
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate. I knew that I wanted my training to be quite rigorous, quite difficult. And there was only, you know, they always say if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. And I really felt that way. And so I was very fortunate to be able to go to Columbia and spend a lot of wonderful time learning so many different skills, not just medicine, but there's a large Spanish-speaking population, which ended up becoming quite important towards my career as well. So Columbia really helped hone me in so many different ways of being able to care for patients and to be able to care for patients throughout all backgrounds.
Now, also at Columbia, I was actually on the board there. We had a panel, which was called the Panel of Traditional Medicine. And the group of people on that panel, we argued for probably the first 6 months about what to call the panel. I very much supported using the name Panel of Traditional Medicine. And then we had to define that, because by traditional medicine, what we meant were things like Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, Western herbalism. And we brought in such high people as Vasant Lad, who's an excellent Ayurvedic physician. But there was a discussion about the use of the word traditional. Should that be used for that kind of medicine, or should it be used for conventional modern medicine? Because there's a lot of confusion about that.
No, you're right. And Ellen, you know, even back then when I trained many, many moons ago, I think healthcare was still wrestling with alternative ways of healing. That's why I'm so happy to be here with you today, because we're speaking the same language. We're talking about healing naturally. And that's something that really, I mean, you don't get that in most of the medical programs and the medical schools yet, but now society is making medicine think about health differently. And that's what I love about some of the things that you're talking about now and the panels you're talking about. You know, it's almost like a movement when we're trying to really get closer to the earth when we're trying to heal. So, you know, that happened to me slowly over the years when I went out to Los Angeles after graduating from Columbia.
Well, that is really interesting, because I know you also have a very deeply grounded knowledge in terms of conventional medicine, which is very, very important. Nobody wants to throw that out at all.
Right, right.
And I really think that's the best in terms of diagnostics. So for me, it's not about conventional versus traditional or versus alternative. In fact, that word alternative, I think we need to drop it. I think we need to move towards using evidence-based medicine and using prudent medicine. And to me, prudent medicine are those therapeutics that have the highest efficacy with the lowest risk as a first line of intervention.
Yeah. I totally agree, because I think it is important that we get to the point of saying it's not us versus them. We're together in alternative ways of healing. And it's so important to think about it that way, because, like I said, the patient is now demanding it. I have so many patients who come to my office just because they know that we're not going to talk about medications. We're going to talk about a lot of other things that are important to me, such as their spirit. What is your spirit right now? What's going on? What's going on in your life? A lot of the things that we never really think about actually affect your health, and a pill is not going to fix it. And so those are some of the things that are quite important when we get together as far as the patient-doctor bond. Those are things that kind of, aren't really scripted when you get out of your residency program.
Now, I want to invite people to investigate your website, either now or after our show. And by the way, Dr. Red Cross's show will be posted on our archive. So if you enjoy something you hear, you can come back and listen again or tell your friends. And his website is drredcross.com. That's very profound. It's drredcross.com. Very easy to find. And one of the things I saw there is you have so much great little video clips. And I actually saw you discussing a natural cough syrup with a patient, which was a child, their mother. So that's amazing in and of itself. Why would you choose something that has maybe herbs and homeopathics and things that most doctors don't even know about?
Well, because two things. One of the things you touched upon, number one, efficacy. That's the first thing. That gets back to what you mentioned. It's not us versus them, right? It was about efficacy. The second thing, it was about the fact that it was natural. That's Chestol. That's from the company Boron. That was so important to bring that in because I started to realize that patients were taking it and getting better, that there weren't any side effects. There weren't any drug-to-drug interactions, and there wasn't an effect of somnolence making you sleepy. And I said, oh, my gosh, this is a way that I can actually make patients better naturally. And so I had to bring that into my armamentarium as to what you're using to treat patients beautifully. And like I said, it's wonderful for our kids. And if you remember, some years ago, Ellen, we didn't know what we could give our kids that was safe over the counter. And Chestol has a wonderful place for that. And so that's why I thought it was so important to really speak out about it.
Right, and of course, if we go back a few more years, actually grandmothers did know what to use because they would use something that I also recommend, like take a clove of garlic, squish it up in a cup, squeeze a quarter of a lemon, add hot water, and a little bit of honey. And I used that for my children all the time, even though some of those more advanced homeopathics were not yet on the market.
Yeah, and I love that. You know, I grew up that way too. Was my grandmother really doing a lot of the same things? It's so funny. I don't know. Maybe you guys knew each other, or your mom did, because you're right. We used to do some of the same things. A little change here and there, but the point is, it was all natural. Especially when we got sick. When we were sick, we weren't doing some of the conventional things that were out there. I mean, things like chicken noodle soup, things that you're mentioning. That was the way that I healed. So maybe that's why I kind of, you know, I always tease and say I kind of saw the light. And that's probably why over my career I started to realize, like, well, Ken, you know, this is the way you were treated growing up. And you're a pretty healthy guy. It must have worked for you. And so it can definitely work for patients.
And beyond that, there is now more and more evidence. Anyone can go to PubMed and actually look up any herb. And if their physician says these things have never been studied, well, they're kind of looking like they have their foot in their mouth, because then the patients come in with a pile of stuff that they printed off of PubMed about a particular herb. And I'm talking about some placebo-controlled double-blind studies in the Journal of Gastroenterology or something, and they'll bring it to their gastroenterologist, and they've never read it. And they'll be very dismissive.
Yeah, you're right.
Which is awful.
You're right, and it's terrible. And it's so important that you mention that everyone go out and go to PubMed and do those things, Ellen, right? You have to be an advocate for your health care. You have to go out and do a little bit of the research, and you bring it back to us. You bring it back to the doc. I'll tell you guys out there, a lot of you may not understand, but you may be even educating your physician. And I think any physician out there who doesn't feel they can be educated by their patients are absolutely wrong, because that's sort of how I started to learn about some of these other ways of healing than just some of the things that we were doing. So I think the medical community needs to be a lot more open than we have. And if a lot of the listeners actually go out and be an advocate for their health and say, you know, doc, let's talk about some of these things we had on PubMed. Let's discuss these things. What is your take on these things? And that's when you get back once again to that patient-doctor bond, when you guys are actually together in a team in your health. That's key to me.
Well, that's another thing that we can go to that is so important, because unfortunately for most physicians, and let's support them now, and you're certainly one of them, they are forced, if they are doing medicine under an HMO kind of program,
yeah,
if a patient walks in with a pile of studies, they have to treat that patient in 8 minutes. And not only that, they usually don't even touch the patient or smell the patient or see the patient because, unfortunately, their back is to the patient because they're typing notes and looking for codes for 8 minutes on the computer.
No,
I mean, it's horrible.
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, you were being very nice. They don't even have 8 minutes. The actual average is 7.5 minutes. So you can take 30 seconds from that if you can believe it. But you're right. Look, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. The whole reason why I had to step back and say, you know, am I really doing no harm, as the Hippocratic Oath says? In other words, am I giving the patient everything that they deserve and the time and my attention? And so I had to pull out of those models. Look, I worked in some of those models when I started my career initially. I didn't know of any alternatives, but I started to feel like, you know, I can't really take good care of 30 patients in a day and really get into their soul. That's what I always tell the patients. My whole goal is to get into their soul, and I can't do that in 7.5 minutes. Deal with their health issues, find out how their family is doing, deal with the primary care portion of making sure that they've had their mammogram, their colonoscopy, that sort of thing. You can't do that in 7.5 minutes well, and the patients deserve more. And so I had to kind of step back and realize what was most important for the patients, more so than the health networks.
So how often how long do you stay with a patient if they come to see you?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. You know, it really depends. I spend a couple of hours with a patient. Usually when
couple
we come in,
hours.
The best thing
Let's
is
say that again. A couple of hours.
Yeah, no, 2 hours. Because, you know, lots of times I like to go to the home. So if I can go to the home and really spend time, guess what? I'm realizing why Miss Jones has an asthma flare. Well, she has 3 cats and a parakeet.
And mold.
And I'm realizing, and like, oh, my gosh, I wouldn't have known that unless I was home with her.
So you like
and
doing
so being
home
able
visits.
To see her that way is beautiful.
Isn't that amazing? So you actually will go and see someone's environment, which is going to give you, as a physician, much more information about what's leading to their health challenges.
Oh, absolutely. I have my little black bag. I wish all of you and the listeners could watch. Come over to the car. I have my little black bag right in the car. And I'll go visit some folks sometimes. Or if they come to the office, we're talking about everything. You know, I want to know, is your daughter, how'd the wedding go? I want to know, how did it go? How was the food? I mean, those are all things that are so important to happiness. And that's what I think should be important when you come see your doctor. You should leave happy. You should leave together feeling like, wow, what a visit. I can't believe I just had a visit that fulfilling. And you have to do that with time. You know, I'm very blessed in that I don't necessarily have to rush, but this is because of this particular and special model where, once again, it's very patient-centric, and I think that's where healthcare is going right now, and it's perfect to be able to have, a system that's patient-centric, and then we're coming back to healthy ways of healing. It's like we're going back to the way it used to be.
It really was, because as a child, my pediatrician came to the house. I remember him clearly,
I
Dr. Shmira. He came to the house, sat on the bed, took my temperature, looked at rashes carefully, not with his back to a computer, you know. He could smell what's going on in the house. He could see, oh, look, my mother had a glass of milk there. He said, don't do that anymore. She has a congestion. He went over and opened the window a little bit himself. He walked to the window and said, you know what, you can't keep it so hot and stuffy. I mean,
I love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
And it's not that long ago. So it's really amazing that you're bringing back real patient medicine in your concierge practice. Now, where is your office located?
I am in New York. I am in Westchester, New York, in the Eastchester area, not far from New Rochelle. But once again, I'm pretty mobile. So, you know, I usually get out sometimes. I will go to a patient, whether it's their home or maybe their workplace. But when they need to see me in the office, I usually see them over in the Westchester area.
That's great. So you have flexibility with having people come to your office or that. Now, a first visit might be 2 hours, but what about if they become an ongoing patient? Then, you know, you might not need that much time another time, or is it still a very long process?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, that 2 hours, for instance, the patient that I was just mentioning, it wasn't even her first time. I mean, she's been a part of my concierge for, gosh, a little over a year or so now. It was just kind of what was required at the time. You know, she had some things that she wanted to talk about and get my thoughts and opinion on. And so we kind of worked through those things. But I can tell you, you know, even subsequent appointments, I don't really think I have any less than, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes or so, Alan, 30 or anything less than that. Because we're catching up, we're talking about things, we're having some dialogue back and forth. So I don't really have any abbreviated appointments like I used to in my career a long time ago. So they're probably all at least 20 to 30 minutes, a minimum, I would assume.
At least. And that's time you're with the patient, not typing notes into a computer. It's amazing.
No.
What is that about, doctor? What is that about? I think it's horrific. I'm not kidding. When I've accompanied patients lately, I really do see the doctor turned around to the computer, looking over his shoulder, asking questions, and trying to find a code. That's what they're taking their time for.
Yeah, you know, this is great to talk about because all the listeners could understand at least the way a lot of the physicians in the United States are dealing with and what I used to deal with. So if everyone can imagine, you're having maybe 30 people, maybe 5 people an hour or so on your schedule, so 30 patients for the day. And then what happens in that day is that, once again, we talked about the 7.5 minutes that the doctor gets. Well, the other thing that's also important is also not just the time that the doctor gets with you directly, but the doctor also has to think about the next patient that's waiting, about who's scheduling that patient, is the patient on time, and then not only that, they have to think about how am I going to complete my notes for tonight to be able to spend time with my family, to be able to spend time doing the things that I enjoy doing. So therefore, you have this horrible cycle where the doctors are loaded up with patients. They don't have enough time to see the patients. They have to document on the patients. And I think what starts to happen is we're trying to document while the patient is there so that once we see that patient, then we're able to move on to the next one and not be there all night long. And so it is horrible the way the system is set up because it's very much volume-driven when we all should be really focusing on value. But the healthcare system hasn't quite figured it out yet. So when it's built on volume, that's the sort of care that patients are unfortunately getting all across the United States. And it's just not fair. It's not fair for the patient. It's very difficult for a patient to really feel engaged when the doc is talking and also whether they're texting or whether they're typing into the computer, into the electronic medical record. That's not the patient-doctor bond that really, in my eyes, leads to healing. But I get it. I understand why my colleagues are struggling with this all around the nation. But I'm just explaining so that when everyone goes in to see their doctor, they understand, like, you know, I see what he or she is going through, but maybe we can just hit the pause button and say, hey, look, I understand that you have to put this stuff into the computer, but please, you know, I'm a little concerned. I'm worried. I'd love your attention. There's nothing wrong with telling us that. There's nothing wrong with engaging your doctor. We are all regular people as well. And you know what? Maybe we don't know we haven't made eye contact in a few minutes. Just talk to us. You have to. Once again, you need to take control of your health care. You've spent your copay. You've spent your time. You've taken time off of work. You deserve to have a real visit.
That's true. Well, thank you for that sharing. And we're going to come back with more, Dr. Red Cross. We're going to take a little break right here on Progressive Radio Network, and we are talking with our wonderful guest today, Dr. Ken Red Cross, MD. You can find out more at drredcross.com or visit our archived show, and you can link right to his webpage and connect with him. So we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And you can visit us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We have lots of exciting adventures coming your way. For instance, in April, on April 10th, we have our next Chinatown adventure where we actually go into Chinatown. It's like spending a day in another country, and you'll learn about tongue and pulse diagnosis, Chinese herbs. We actually have a sacred tea ceremony and something that's very enjoyable. We sell out every year. This is our 28th year of doing our Chinatown Echo Tours for Cures. And if you'd like to join in, now is the time to sign up before it sells out. Also in March, we have our Echo Tours to Cures to Jamaica, where we take a group of people to live with the indigenous healers of the Maroon culture on the north coast of Jamaica. Again, this is our 27th trip there, and you actually get to live with indigenous shamanic healers for a week and get college credit for those of you who want college credit. And that's leaving pretty soon on March 12th, so you can still find out more by visiting naturalnurse.com or send us an email. Also, we have our wonderful webinar with Dr. Michael Murray, which is 100% free to get information from not only yours truly, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, but a plethora of top physicians in holistic medicine, including Dr. Stephen Sinatra, Dr. Mercola, Dr. Michael Murray, and so many more. So you can just go to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Click on register, and there is absolutely no fee, and you can join in and listen to all of those webinars, whichever ones you can make, and then you can make it up at night and other times that it will be available for you to listen to. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Dr. Ken Redcross, medical doctor, and he is board certified in internal medicine and is focusing his practice now on concierge medicine, where he can actually spend time, like he said, up to 2 hours with a patient and develop a healthcare plan that is based on natural interventions and I'm sure also pharmaceutical therapies when those are indicated. So thank you so much for joining us today on our show. Let's welcome back.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Wonderful to be back.
Yes, Dr. Redcross. Now, so let me ask you that, too. I mean, you're a physician. You're allowed to prescribe medication. Are there times when you feel that is indicated for a person?
Absolutely. And like you mentioned before, it's about the balance, right? It's about being centered. And I think you need to be centered as a physician as well to be able to marry some of the natural things or holistic things with regular traditional medicine.
Conventional medicine.
With diabetes.
Right. Right, because
yep,
what if you have an elderly,
exactly.
If you have an elderly patient that really has, you know, pretty severe health concerns and they don't want to change their diet, they don't want to exercise every day, you know, those are times when I think it's time to go to a pharmaceutical drug which actually, you know, slam dunks and changes numbers effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. With congestive heart failure and some of those things, we know we have data that improves outcome, that lowers mortality, some of those things. Absolutely. That's exactly the perfect time when you have to bring in some of those medications to really get the outcome that you really want.
But you have the judgment to decide. That's what's so wonderful about you, because you've kept up both with whatever pharmaceuticals are around, you know, when needed. I would say that's kind of a moving towards a last-ditch effort, because so often you can use something more effective and lower cost and with no risks. So I'm going to talk about some of those things. You brought up chicken soup a while ago, so let's go all the way to low tech. We actually know that there are studies. You talked about a study in the journal Chest, which is a mainstream journal, about the infection-fighting properties developed by chicken soup. What are some of those?
Well, you know, it's funny because we never know. This is just more proof, Ellen, that mom is always right. And I don't know if mom knew that chicken soup is actually a medicine, but you're right. In that exact journal you mentioned, they now know that when we do take chicken soup, it slows the migration or the movement of white blood cells to those areas that can cause problems, such as to our lungs when we start to get the cough or to our nasal passages where we get the sneezing. So when we take it, it's a little more than just taking the soup and the vapor opening up your airways, but it's actually acting as a medicine. So chicken soup is extremely important when you come down with any sort of virus, especially like flu season that we're kind of dealing with now.
Well, something that you talked about with grandmothers is important to me, because if we see grandmothers in every culture, I mean Chinese grandmothers and Jewish grandmothers and Afro-American grandmothers and all grandmothers across the world say to have chicken soup, you know it's good. And then to have scientific data to show why it works is really incredible.
No, very, very powerful, actually. You know, and it's funny, now that we were talking about chicken soup, a couple of things I talk to patients about. We're dealing with the flu season right now. We know that we've all been seeing this wacky weather we have. Here in New York, it's 50 degrees, and the next day it was 3 degrees. And so when we're dealing with the flu, it looks like it's going to extend all the way out until May. So we need to be prepared. Chicken noodle soup is one thing I talk about. I talk also about Osillo, which is a homeopathic remedy, which is kind of, I like to call it the best kept secret, but it's probably not accurate because it hasn't been a secret in Europe for about 50 years. They've been using it. And once again, Ellen, studies show it decreases both the severity and the duration of flu-like symptoms when taken within the first 24 to 48 hours. And back to kids as well, it's good for kids 2 years of age and older. So that's something else that I like to use when a child comes in that's not feeling well, and then you have to marry something like the cough medicine. One of the other things I love, too, is vitamin D. Vitamin D has become so increasingly important, so important. There's even an organization called the Organic and Natural Health Association, which is totally dedicated to year to getting the word out about vitamin D3. They have a website, thepowerofd.org, where everyone can go out there and you can order kits to check your own vitamin D. We now know that when we're deficient in vitamin D, it makes us more susceptible to infection. So that's something that's really important this time of year during the flu season.
Yeah, and vitamin D, I would say now, and I imagine you would agree, even conventionally focused physicians seem to be testing for it. And if they're not, you can ask, because insurance does cover that test.
Yeah, it does, because you're right. Now the insurances are on board, and the insurances are realizing there's a lot of studies that are really bearing out how important vitamin D is. Most of the docs out there are definitely on board. But you know what's interesting, Eileen, and you'll appreciate this since you're so much on the natural side of healing. We're all kind of all over the place as far as the dosage of what the vitamin D should be.
What's your opinion?
You know,
I'm very interested in that.
Oh. Most patients will talk about at least 2,000, but some could say, you know, hey, Dr. Red Cross, you're being a little conservative. Some will say they'll take 5,000. It just takes time for patients to understand, not to get too scared off if they do hear 5,000 or a little bit larger numbers. But 2,000 is the bare minimum when we're talking about vitamin D. It's that important and that valuable. Whenever the vitamin D is deficient, everyone, I don't want you to get nervous if your doctor talks about 50,000 units.
Yeah,
we use that to
right.
boost up your vitamin D.
Yes, and I do. I even see conventional doctors. Yes, I see many conventional doctors, if that vitamin D comes back low, recommending, and I don't know if that's short term or what, 50,000 a day. That sounds very high to me. What do you think of that?
No. Well, actually, it's 50,000 a week, so don't worry. It's only 50,000 a week, and it's just one pill. I tell everyone, look, take it on Sunday. That way you don't forget. And usually, depending on how low, it's usually 4 to 6 weeks. So therefore, it may be a month and a half that you do it every Sunday, and then you could drop down to the 2,000 a day. But that's just to get you boosted up if you're quite deficient.
You see, no matter how long I've been doing this, I learn something new every single time, because patients of mine have said the doctor recommended 50,000, and I was thinking it was a day. So this is the first I heard. That's the prescription vitamin D, and the dosing is per week.
Right, exactly. So that's important for everyone to understand, because I hate for patients to get scared off, especially when vitamin D has such a benefit. So it's only once a week.
Okay, that puts a whole new light on it for me. How amazing. And the kind of vitamin D, there's several on the market. Like there's vitamin D that's D3, and there's vitamin D that's D2 called ergocalciferol. What are your feelings about the different forms?
Well, the D2 is the 50,000. So when you're getting that, that's the D2. When you're getting over the counter, you want to get D3. That's the one that you want to have. That's the regular daily doses of your vitamin D, and that's D3. And lots of times you'll see, I wouldn't even say that there's necessarily a brand per se, because patients ask a lot about that. I'm just happy if patients are taking it. And so I'm just, I'm just very, very happy if they do. So I don't really talk about brands or anything for vitamin D3.
Well, what I tell patients in terms of all supplements, of course, I do make very specific recommendations, and it might be different brands for different people, but one thing I'm very particular about across the line with supplementation is learning to read not only the kind and form of each individual nutrient, but also the other ingredients. Because there can be a range on the supplement shelves of things that have a big paragraph that have dye in them and coloring agents and sweeteners
all the
way to nothing.
Yeah.
And I would like to go with nothing. So that's a way to judge a better quality.
No, you're right. I love that you said that, because you're right. Patients take a lot of things and they'll bring right over to their office, right? Patients will come with a bag full of their supplements that they're taking. And you're right. You need to go through that. You know, I like to kind of go through those, because lots of times I'm able to kind of pick out something and let them know, you know what, that's a homeopathic remedy, and that's this, that, and the other. So I'm kind of learning there with them as well, but also educating and saying, you know, like you said, I cannot stand dyes. I don't like fillers. I don't like anything that's not, as I always say, closer to the earth. I don't like artificial flavor and that kind of thing. So we can talk about those things, but that is a wonderful point you mentioned as far as what are you taking with the supplements, and if you're getting that active component without any impurities.
It's so true. And even as you were talking a little earlier about children, like children get a cold or flu and people run and get some of the over-the-counter pharmaceuticals, some of those have quite dangerous ingredients in there. And it's amazing that they're actually on the market.
Yeah, they do. And a lot of them can be sedating. That's why, you know, some of the things you mentioned earlier as far as the cough medicine, I love to use some of those things. They're not sedating. They don't affect our children's sensorum. They're able to still kind of be themselves and heal, but you don't have to worry about a kid that is not yours, that is sleepy and just kind of down for the count. And so that's so important when you're looking at the ingredients. A lot of the ingredients for the cold medicines, everyone should take a peek. It'll have Benadryl, diphenhydramine, which, look, may have its case for some things that are that it's able to help and assist. But some of that you don't want going into, you know, a little body, you know, a little child or something like that. So you need to be careful with what we're giving our kids especially.
Yeah, and then when you look at the risk-benefit ratio, obviously as a physician there are times if someone's going to have strangulation because of severe congestion, you might use it for a few days. But
sure,
otherwise,
the
risk-benefit ratio is not there. You're better off with homeopathics like you're talking about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm with you on that. You know, that's how I get into some other talks as well about, like, probiotics. We all are all aware how important probiotics are, but I talk about that a lot, too, just to keep your constitution up,
they've become really popular. What are probiotics, and why do you recommend them?
Well, a lot of our immune system, everyone, is housed in the lining of our gut. It's funny because Chinese medicine has gotten this eons ago where a lot of the focus of acupuncture and a lot of other things really focuses on the gut. The gut is that important. And so what we've learned over the years is that we have good bacteria in our stomach and in our intestines, and the good bacteria helps us fight infection and is good for our overall immune health. So probiotics have become very important because they put back good bacteria into our gut. So, for instance, let's say you get a viral illness. You get sick, you get a cold, you get the flu. Lots of times it will prey on the good bacteria in the gut. And so when you take a probiotic, you're really replenishing or relining your gut with that good immune-fighting bacteria. And there's been wonderful studies as far as the flu and infection and also for irritable bowel syndrome. So now medicine is finally starting to kind of embrace probiotics. So it's a good bacteria that's being re-implemented or reinstituted right into your body. And you can also get it, if we want to get even more natural, not just in pill form, Ellen. You can actually get it in sauerkraut. You can actually get the natural form of probiotics in kimchi, if you like Korean cuisine. So there's a lot of other ways to actually get probiotics as well if you're not a pill person. So I love that about probiotics. Anything that's natural gives me like chill bumps, Ellen. So that's why I had to mention sauerkraut and kimchi wants it in food form.
Well, we're going to take one more little break right here, Dr. Red Cross, to allow our station here, which is Progressive Radio Network. They like to tell you about lots of shows that are right on here. This entire station is under the influence of Dr. Gary Null, who put it together, and lots of his shows are on here as well. And when we come back, we are going to discuss more with our guest today, Dr. Ken Red Cross, MD, and you can find him at drredcross.com. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food, and you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, is all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Eutrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Love, lust, and laughter. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, a board-certified sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist. Guests, colleagues, authors are interviewed, and we sometimes dispense advice to create a format that is both informative and entertaining. If you can't listen live, go to the archives and even rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope that you are coming with us.
Your best choice for voices outside the mainstream. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to talk to you, so please do get in touch. Visit us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And while you're there, check out the calendar of classes, many of which are in your area and free. Right now we have three of them this week in Florida. And then we have many coming up in the Connecticut, Long Island, New York area, including the Chinatown trip on April 10th. And we also have online, lots and lots of online classes. Starting in March, we have a four-week herbal certification course, and that's actually one class a month for 4 months, and then you do homework in between. And when you're done, if you've completed all the assignments appropriately, you will get an herbal certification from the Florida School of Holistic Living, along with 18 CEUs for professionals. And that includes nurses, midwives, massage therapists, acupuncturists, and dietitians. All of you receive 18 CEUs for taking that course. And if you don't need CEUs, you get a certificate from the Florida School of Holistic Living. In fact, I'm just coming home from the weekend-long yearly Florida Herbal Conference. We sold out. 800 people came to that this week. It was just an amazing experience for me because I got to hang out and, of course, present to 800 like-minded herbal medicine practitioners. And thank you so much for all who incorporated that into their life. But it's so nice now having the online access because people don't necessarily have to travel if they can't, and you can still access all of that information. And thank you so much for joining us today. We have as our guest Dr. Ken Redcross. And Dr. Redcross, I'm looking at your site right now at drredcross.com, and I see you started your concierge practice not yesterday. It was founded in 2005.
Yeah, that's 11 years ago. 2007, close to 2005, 2007. Yeah, yeah, some time ago. I'm giving away my age out there, Ellen. So
that's okay. More power to you, and also more experience as a doctor that you have. So that's amazing that you had this vision even then, which is quite a while ago, that you weren't necessarily happy seeing 30 patients a day, that you needed more time to devote to your patients.
Yeah, and it was interesting because it happened slowly. You know, when I was practicing that way in that particular model, you know, I didn't understand why I didn't feel fulfilled. I didn't really get it. It took a while. Like I said, it took around that time in 2015, 2007, because, you know, I had a patient that came in one time, and she was taking care of an executive in the television world, and he was sick and couldn't come out because he was too busy. And then I recall asking her, you know what, ask him if he would mind. I'd come and see him if he's too busy to come out. And she looked at me twice, probably like I had two heads, like, really? And something just came in me to say, yeah, sure. So I went in on the lot. I took my stethoscope with me. I took a little blood pressure cuff, and next thing you know, I was there. He was elated, and he just could not believe that a doctor came to him. And so, you know, it's very funny. And so he's kind of like, so how much do I owe you, doc? And it was so funny, Ellen, because I had no idea. I was like, your choice, I guess, you know, because I was just so happy to be there and to leave there with him so happy of me just coming to see him. And it was like almost like an instant success inside. And it was like, Ken, I think you found yourself. I think you found your passion and what you love. And it was patient contact. It was being close with the patient. It was that little bond that was forged in, you know, that 20 minutes that I was there with him, being able to be there. And so I started to think back there, like, oh my gosh, what if I could actually do this for my job one day? And here we are, gosh, 9 years later or however many years now, to where now it's something that I've been very blessed to really be able to do. And I really hope, you know, touch people and really feel that they feel as fortunate as I do to really be in their lives.
And of course, you can do all kinds of checkups with the person, and then if you feel that you need further testing, they can come into the office, or you can write a prescription for a lab test. So you're not losing anything.
No, not at all. And you're right. You hit the nail right on the head. You know, that's exactly what I do. You know, I can write a prescription. I've even figured out how to kind of, and I love when patients can actually go to the lab and they don't know how I've done this, but I'm on my computer and I've already set up with the lab. So when they go there, they feel very important because they go there to the Quest or the LabCorp and their labs are already waiting for them. And they're like, oh my gosh, how could you do that? Because while I'm talking to them on the phone, I'm on the site and I'm setting it up for them. And so they can go right into there. And once again, it's about respecting their time, respecting their lives. You know, I'm very busy, but so are my patients. And so I think patients really love feeling like someone values them. And so, you know, that's what completes me, for patients to really feel valued. So you're absolutely right. You could do a lot and not necessarily have to be in the office.
So you can do things like a usual annual physical exam. And then once you have their health records, since you are rather, you know, savvy online and all of that, you probably can, if someone gets ill and calls you, you can look it up from wherever and know what's going on with them to have a background about what's this visit is about.
Yeah, no, it's, I have my system set up to where it's mobile. So you're right. I don't necessarily have to be at a desktop. I can have a laptop. Even, quite honestly, even on my phone, I'm able to send prescriptions if need be and look at the chart if I really want to, by my smartphone. So, you know, I think that was the best way to do it, especially if I'm out and about or if I have to travel a little bit. That way I can kind of still stay connected and not necessarily be anchored to a desk. Now that I've kind of changed the way that I practice, you know, I realize how much I think I missed or didn't understand how important it was for me to get out of the office, to get out to the people, get out to the world, and kind of spread happiness that way, as opposed to kind of being cooped up. I don't think I realized that even about myself. So I've learned a lot about me throughout this process as well. And I think that's why it's just been so beautiful, because then I can share that with patients as well.
Yes, and also if they're the kind of patient, which they may or may not be, that prefers a more natural wellness approach. I'm sure you talk about diet. I mean, you just talked about fermented foods, which I think is one of the most marvelous interventions to start off with, and then going to things like herbs and homeopathics.
Yeah, you know, it's wonderful, because now that a lot of patients are realizing that I'm Western trained, but that I'm so open to a lot of the natural ways of healing, I have patients who, honestly, Ellen, educate me on some of the things they're taking and some of the research they've done. And then I have to kind of sit down like a student, almost, you know, Indian style, sitting down on the floor and listening to them as if they're the teacher now. And I'm listening to some of the things that they've used, their grandmothers used, some of the data they have. And I learn. That's why I'm so fortunate to do what I do. I learn every day from patients and learning from some of the things that I'm listening to on your show, Those things are huge. And I think if when the day that we stop learning is the day that we're no longer living. And I think that's why it's so important to me.
That's such a great model, because I think a lot of people do get that sense when they go to see their doctor, who is overworked and, you know, just under a huge amount of stress, that they're not really so happy. And they also don't have that much time for you. And what you're talking about is a model where a doctor who is teacher is also open to that very personal one-to-one interaction. And, of course, you have best practices. So you're going to have your medical opinion. You're a board-certified internist, but you're happy with what you're doing. You have time for your patients. And so it's going to be an entirely different medical experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's so funny as we talk about this, because it's giving me time to even reflect. You know, I've been so passionate. I've been trying to write a book, Ellen. I'm embarrassed to say since 2007 about the patient bond and the patient-doctor bond, I should say, and how to create that and what that's about and what that means to me. And so that's one of those things that at some point I'll put this together. But, you know, it's that important. It's that important in healthcare. And honestly, I will say it's that important in just society. You know, even as we're dealing with, and we're in a political arena now and everybody is picking sides and so forth, you know, put your ear and really hear what's going on as far as healthcare and what's going on as far as, are we becoming more health-centric or are we kind of shying away from the patient-doctor bond? And that's why it's so important for me at some point to finally finish this little book,
just
so that I can get my feelings out.
Yes, and in terms of writing a book, and I've written 12 books, you can go to my website, naturalnurse.com, and look at books. There's only one way to do that, doctor, and this is true for everyone. You're committed to doing it. You have to actually write in your schedule certain number of hours per week. It could even be just 2 hours per week that are actually blocked out book time. And during that time, the other thing is you don't have to write it in order. Just for those 2 hours a week, you write something and keep them in the file. And then as you have a lot of things that you want together, then you write an outline that matches the content you already produced. And that's how you will get it done. And I hope you do. And when you do, let us know, and we'll definitely have you on as a guest when that thing is sent out.
Well, thank you.
To help so many people.
Thank you. And thank you for those words of wisdom. I wish I were jotting that down. I'm going to have to listen to this again and jot down your words of wisdom. And hopefully that'll push me through. So thank you.
Okay. Well, we are at the end of our show. And what a fabulous, wonderful guest you have been. I'm going to come up and visit you personally when I get back to the cold areas there in the north once it's the summer. And can you just tell our imparting words of wisdom to our listeners and also how to get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for listening. And I want everyone to keep in mind that there's a lot to your health spiritually from really making sure that you treat yourself right, whether that be through meditation. And please, no stress allowed. Stress is now a risk factor, and we all have to take that seriously. So be healthy, and more importantly, be happy.
Thank you so much, Dr. Red Cross, and thank you, too. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.